Hello, everybody. Welcome back to S&P Now. This is episode 26 for Christmas, December 25th. Josh, who is our sponsor today?
Hey, this week's episode is brought to you by Julie Zook with Silver Legacy Realty. If you're interested in buying a home in our beautiful Silver Valley, or if you would like to sell your home, please contact Julie at 208-659-1764. And Julie Zook, she's your best friend in real estate.
This is going to be a very Julie Zook-filled episode.
Yes, there's a lot of Julie here.
But that's okay.
There's nothing wrong with that.
I don't have a problem with that at all.
None of us complain about that.
No.
The more Julie, the better.
That's what I say.
Yep.
Yep. What's going on, Josh?
It's Christmas.
It is Christmas. We're coming to you on Christmas.
It's that holiday, I don't want to say malaise, but...
It's like senioritis, but with Christmas.
In our industry, it's weird because it's dead. I mean...
Yeah, no one's going to return a call from us today. Yeah.
And for the most part, for the better part, people are shutting down for the holidays. So unless something breaking happens, which usually is not a good thing.
Right.
We don't have a whole lot to do right
now. Nobody calls us on like Christmas night saying, there's free puppies.
Yeah.
In Kellogg.
They'll be signing a new ordinance into order on Christmas. No, that doesn't happen.
No.
Usually it's like, oh, the school's on fire.
Yeah, exactly.
Or something horrible like that.
It's terrible.
And then it's not even like a quick get in, get out story. It's like, we've been on scene for 5 hours
as right.
This building, you know, continues to burn.
Don't jinx it. We're doing okay.
That's about the norm for us.
Pretty much. Well, all right. Let's get the people informed a little bit for Christmas and send them into their week. And this is actually going to be our last episode for the year.
Yeah.
So let's give 2019 a good send off here and go through our Friday and Tuesday editions.
Yeah.
You got the headline on Friday, December 20th.
We did have the headline. The headline, what are you doing here? And this was a story that I got to write. Anyone who's been on Facebook and in the Silver Valley has seen the pictures just flooding all of the various like major congregate Facebook pages, the classifieds pages, the fun pages. And it's a bighorn sheep has been hanging out in Burke.
Huh.
I got a little curious because I've been around here for, you know, 28 years and never really encountered a bighorn sheep. So I was just
been
curious.
Been in North Idaho my entire life and never seen one.
Right. So I reached out to Kira Sitari with Idaho Fish and Game.
Mm-hmm.
And she kind of explained to me some stuff. Things like these juvenile male bighorn sheep have a tendency to wander from their herd. And so I was like, well, where do you think this one's herd is?
Mm-hmm.
And she informed me that just over the hills in Montana near Thompson Falls, that they've been tracking a herd about 40, 50 strong.
Mm-hmm.
And that these bighorn sheep are actually really, really prevalent in western Montana.
Oh, okay.
But sometimes they do have a tendency to wander. Obviously, they don't care about
state lines.
I wonder
why the young ones do that. Maybe they're just hard-headed. I tried to copy it.
Tried to get the Santa laugh, the sarcastic Santa. But I kind of dug in, did a little research. You know, the population has been dwindling. It used to be such a huge population of these bighorn sheep. But as people settled the West and things like that, the population trimmed down. And Montana Department of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks has done a really good job trying to bring it back. And right about now, there's about 5,600 population of bighorn sheep in Montana, which is a really solid number. That doesn't count any of the national parks. They obviously don't get in and count the national parks. That is for the, you know, National Parks Department, those employees. So there's probably closer to, I would venture with Glacier and Yellowstone and things like that, there's probably, I would say probably close to double that, probably about 10,000 of these bighorn sheep in Montana. But they seem to do really well. They thrive in the snowy, high mountain conditions. So obviously hanging out at Burke is like the perfect place for them. So,
right.
Yeah. So that was a fun story. Did really well online.
Yeah. Well, people like to hear about that.
Surprisingly well online.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that. All right. Moving down to the centerpiece. This was a pre-up story for the Snake Pit Christmas dinner, a tradition that was kind of started by Joe Peek back in the day. Long-standing tradition. The current owner, Tom Richards. Yeah. Got it right the first time. Tom doesn't necessarily know how long the tradition's been going on. Could be from anywhere to 20, 40 years. But it's been one of the three main traditions at the Snake Pit, big events wise, and they're continuing the tradition. They had the event. They ended up having the event on Monday, and from what I heard, it went well.
Yeah. It's always fun. It's like a free dinner, and there's free presents for kids. Mm-hmm. It is not a
Santa shows up.
Yeah, Santa's there. It's not a cheap.
No.
For the owners.
No. It's not. There are some things that are, you know, made for like people who, you know, can't afford something on the holidays or something. And while those people are invited as well, this is just a big Christmas dinner that everyone's invited to.
Yeah. It's really cool.
Definitely.
Side rail story. We talked about an open house. Wallace City Council hosted an open house at the junior senior high school in Wallace there. To talk about and present their bridge plans and the whole kind of Megillah there concerning the 66th Street Bridge. This bridge has been kind of not a trouble area, but it's been under the careful eye of the city council as well as engineering firms since last spring. Actually, I'd say late last winter, like last February. They put over a temporary bridge to make sure that the big rigs that go up there for logging and the remediation projects can get back over without having to go all the way to Murray. But they finally settled on some plans, and they wanted to present those plans to the people of the city of Wallace. This particular bridge is going to cost about $1.5 million. It's amazing all the things that have to go into it. Mm-hmm. But part of the reason they picked this specific design is, while there's a lot that goes into this bridge, there's also a lot that doesn't have to go into it, including very specific culverting and things like that to get the 9 Mile Creek and the Painters Creek, where they converge into the South Fork River. This bridge design actually comes with those built in, so it's not separate projects. It's pretty much one project. Should take about 3 months to get done once they start, but they don't know exactly. I mean, around here, construction projects starting is weather dependent, so we don't know exactly when they're going to start, but expect them to start fixing that bridge as soon as the weather gives them the clearance to.
Gotcha. Cool. I mean, yeah, that bridge is, I mean, it's a focal point of town, so yeah. It's going to be a big deal.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then last story on the front page, KSD getting A's and B's of the flu variety. Yeah. Kellogg School District has been dealing with some weird kind of on-again, off-again battles with the flu. And it all started back in November, about the time we ran a story about Silver Hills Elementary closing the school because they'd hit that 30% threshold for absenteeism. That Panhandle Health has a threshold where if your attendance is 30% lighter because of the flu, you were to close the school down and then, like, deep clean the school.
Right.
Kellogg School District has more kids, so hitting that 30% is a little bit more difficult. Mm-hmm. But they've gotten pretty close. They've gotten pretty close a couple times. But they've always had the ability to, like, there's a break on the horizon. So back then, it was they saw a bunch of people with the flu and strep throat, but they had a week off for the Thanksgiving holiday and parent-teacher conference.
So timing was good.
So they, you know, okay, we'll get through the last day. It was a Thursday when they saw it. Mm-hmm. So they were like, you know what, let's just get through Friday, and then they have a week off. This year, this month, same situation. The only difference is last month they were dealing with influenza B, and this month they're dealing with influenza A and strep throat, and they had this high number of absenteeism on a Thursday, and it was Friday the next day, and they were like, let's just get through Friday, and then they've got 2.5 weeks off for Christmas break. So,
all right.
So the Kellogg School District, I'm assuming, is probably the janitorial staff is like deep cleaning the schools to make sure that when the kids come back.
When they say that, deep cleaning the schools, I think of like the firemen coming in and just
torching everything.
Well, that or just taking a hose and just just hitting everything.
It always makes me think of the movie Men in Black when they shoot the alien at the beginning and then they bring the crews in with the blow torches to clean up all the alien.
That's kind of what I think of too, like hazmat suits and everything.
Yeah. But I did talk to Superintendent Nancy Larson, and she would love it if, you know, with flu season and the flu strains that constantly change, she's a proponent of students getting the flu shot. So if you're a student in the Kellogg School District or a parent of a student and you can, you know, get your kids a flu shot, please do. I can tell you from experience, I got my flu shot this year, first time I've ever gotten a flu shot. And whereas normally I catch every sickness that comes through, I've
been doing pretty good so far.
I haven't gotten sick yet, knock on wood there, but that'll round out the old front page of the Friday edition.
Perfect.
And, you know, it's Christmas time, and, you know, you'd think it was you know, snowy out there, but apparently it's not.
Nope,
but,
not a white Christmas.
You know, just in case, stop by Silver Eye Tire and purchase some new snow tires. You can also save money with a $50 mail-in rebate via Cooper Tires. This rebate expires December 31st, so you only have a few days. Don't delay. Stop in and see them at 407 West Cameron Avenue in Kellogg, or give them a call at 208-784-1181. Merry Christmas from all of them at Silver Valley Tire.
Oh, very nice from them.
Yeah.
Wishing everybody a nice Christmas.
And, gosh, I feel bad for all those people that, you know, jumped the gun and bought snow tires.
Mm-hmm.
You know, here we are Christmas Eve.
And we're doing just fine.
It's like 40 degrees outside, 45 degrees outside.
I mean, it'll probably come in January, but...
Yeah, we'll probably have another one of those late winters, but...
Yep.
It is what it is.
It is what it is. All right, jumping over to the Tuesday headlines. We actually don't have our print product in front of us. It hasn't been delivered to the office yet. But we know what we wrote. And Josh, the headline was, I believe, the SMC...
All leadership. Right. So the Shoshone Medical Center recently, we ran a story recently announcing that they had hired both a new CEO and CFO, CEO Paul Lewis and CFO Tim Powers.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, Tim Powers wasn't able to, some sort of hiccup, and he had to resign his post.
Okay.
Nothing nefarious or anything like that.
Sure.
Something didn't work out. So now, once again, Shoshone Medical Center is looking for a new CFO. Paul Lewis was really not pleased that Powers had to leave, but the experience has also allowed him the ability to continue to work with Jerry Brantz, the former CEO, CFO.
He held the position jointly.
Yeah, both positions for some years, and kind of led SMC into this phase of growth that they've been in. As they've, you know, opened the family clinic and the wellness center and the cardiopulmonary rehab center and the scope. I mean, all these things have been done under Jerry. So Paul is really looking forward to continuing to work with Jerry. And hopefully, you know, once they fill that spot, Jerry will still be like an integral point of advice for the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they're definitely looking to still hire somebody so Jerry can actually enjoy his retirement.
Right.
So.
Nope. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Jumping over, I believe it's on the site. We're kind of, if I remember my budget correctly, the side rail on the Tuesday edition is going to be the recap of the David Hardy case.
Mm-hmm.
That's, Josh, that story is over 1,600 words long. So even sitting here reading it probably would put everybody to sleep, all of our listeners. But basically, Mr. Hardy was charged with two counts of injury to a child while in the custody or care of a one-year-old infant. After a four-day jury trial with a few witnesses called up by the prosecution, defense didn't call anyone, but they did cross-examine all the witnesses that the prosecution called. After a four-day trial, a Shoshone County jury found him not guilty on one count, which referred to the alleged injuries that were incurred to the child the first time this apparently happened, but was found guilty on the second count, which Keisha Oxendine explained that it made sense to her how it went down that way because while the prosecution had a lot of evidence, well, not a lot, more evidence and a narrower time frame to put him and the child in the same time frame for the second incident, they necessarily didn't have that for the first one. So they understood why that the jury probably came to that conclusion. Mr. Hardy, I believe the max sentence for his own, his count that he was found guilty for is a max of 10 years in prison. He's sitting in the Shoshone County Jail right now, and he'll be awaiting trial or sentencing in February.
Ooh. All the details of that case are crazy.
It's a rough case. Like I said, that story was 1,600 words long, over 1,600 words long, and I still didn't. It's in depth, and it's still not everything.
And once, I mean, there's more to it. And once we get the second part of it, I think we'll be able to talk about it a little bit more in depth.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, read the story, check it out. It's pretty mind blowing.
Yeah, I did mention that in the story. So in addition to there is a side part of this. The mother of the infant, she also pled guilty to a charge of, I believe, not cooperating with law enforcement or failure to provide information for law enforcement.
Obstruction,
something along those lines, yeah.
Yeah.
So she's pled guilty to that, and she'll be appearing at the next law day. So it is a very complicated case. I go in detail in the story. Most of the main essentials are there. But as we both mentioned here, it is a very complicated case.
Yeah. Next story for me, Kellogg School District levy. So once again, and we've talked about this has kind of been a major theme throughout the year, was Kellogg School District and some financial struggles. But one of the things that is kind of, I don't know, it's the norm now, are school districts having to pass these supplemental levies every 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Kellogg is one of 115 school districts in Idaho that has a two-year supplemental levy. Wallace also has one. Mullen had one, but they actually passed a lifetime levy in 2015. So this, what's going on is basically the Kellogg School District held a series of workshop meetings where they brought, you know, teachers, staff, concerned citizens all in and had them kind of gauge where they thought the most of the funding needed to go for the school. And there were a couple options they were presented. They were presented with increased services, increase the levy amount. There was increase the levy amount, services stay the same. There was levy stay the same, services stay the same. Then there was decreased services, money stay the same. And then there was decreased services, decreased money, and then there was elimination of services.
Okay.
So a lot of options. The school district chose to go with the increase the levy amount and keep the services the same.
So for those who might get confused, this is not
the same as a bond.
There you go.
This is not the same as the facility maintenance bond that they tried to pass twice last year. This is a replacement of the two-year levy that has always been around. Yeah, that's been going at least for the last decade. And I actually was able to put a graphic up there to show the financial history of the last decade of Kellogg School District supplemental levy. They went with the increase the levy amount while retaining the same services because if they were to ever see any sort of spike in growth, or the price of the current services they offer was to increase by any bit, they would rather have money readily available there than, you know, have to grow without being financially able to.
Sure.
So the current levy as it stands is like $2.6 million per year. It's a two-year levy. So basically everyone is paying $676 per year per $100,000 of assessed property value.
Okay.
So not a huge amount, really. No. But, you know, for some people that can be a lot.
Sure.
They're looking to increase it slightly, but they don't have that number yet. A slight increase would literally be adding like a few dollars to that annual fee. It wouldn't be like a significant spike.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard rumors that it's somewhere in the ballpark of 300,000 per year.
Oh.
So it would be $2.9 million per year. Mm-hmm. These supplemental levies basically cover 1/3 of the school district's budget.
Wow.
And people always get curious, well, if they don't pass it, what do they start cutting? Well, according to Dr. Nancy Larson, you know, people always throw out, you know, cut sports, cut programs, cut this. They're not going to cut sports and programs. Those are things that keep kids in school. Where they start cutting is the bulk of their money goes to pay teachers. So they start cutting teachers,
mm-hmm.
you know, having, you know, 4 English classes because people want smaller English classes because it's one of those core. Well, what they do is they would take and they'd cut an English teacher.
There you go.
So you'd have 3 English classes with bigger class sizes in each class. Because that's where the overflow is.
And that's a no-win for everyone.
Yeah, it's just not a win for anyone there. And realistically, I mean, these to keep the status quo, I'd say, you know, a slight dollar increase, not too bad. But there will definitely be an opposition to this. People who don't understand the difference between a bond and a levy. These levies are the basically, like I said, this is a third of the district's budget.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't pass this, that
right,
that's a pretty problem, significant yeah. chunk. The rest of that money comes from from the state funded schools, as well as like a little bit from forest funds.
Mm-hmm.
But as those forest funds have declined and things like that, you know, it's a scary time to live if you're a rural school.
Right.
Because the funding is not being made readily available for rural schools. If you want a quality education where you don't ever have to worry about funding, you're going to have to move to a Coeur d'Alene or a Post Falls. And even then, you know, those classes are starting to get pretty full.
Yep.
And people don't want to build another school, as we saw when they tried to pass their
correct
their levy or yep. their bond back in, what was it, November or October?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. So, or no, that was August. That was August.
You're right.
It was random.
I was going to say it's warm. It was warm out.
Yeah. So this is kind of an interesting thing to keep an eye on. There's no set amount yet. They won't be coming up. The school board was presented with all this information. They're kind of wrestling with it themselves, and we will kind of have a resolution and like a sought after amount at their January 8th school board meeting.
Gotcha. Head of next year.
Yep.
Perfect. I think you've got one more story.
Yes, the power outage. So this is kind of it's not a lighthearted story by any means, but last Friday, folks that were on Silver Mountain were kind of left hanging for a little bit. Yeah, a tree branch fell on some power lines.
Oh, no.
And knocked power out primarily to Silver Mountain and parts of the western end of Kellogg.
Oh, wow.
I happened to be at Kellogg Middle School. I was having a conversation with the athletic director, Miss Cheney, Lisa Cheney. And all of a sudden, the lights started to flicker, like really weird. Like really flicker. And then they went out, and then they came back up, and then they flickered again, and they were out. And then they were up, and they were fine, which I'm assuming that's when the generator kicked in.
Sure.
For those over at Silver Mountain, they weren't so lucky, though, because the power went out. And there were reports initially that there was a tree branch on the gondola.
Uh-huh.
So before the gondola, the backup generators could start, people had to go and scout the entire gondola track to make sure there were no branches on it.
Oh,
once
wow.
they did that, then the power was restored with the generator. And then after that, you know, so people on chairlifts,
mm-hmm.
people on the gondola itself, people up at like the mountain house.
Right.
I mean, you were basically up there without power.
Right.
I mean, the nice thing is, it's not like you're stranded. There is a road out of there.
Sure. It's not. Yeah. You're not stuck. But
yeah.
Still, not, though, I mean.
It's not great.
No, it's not ideal.
Yeah. So Jeff Colburn, the general manager at Silver Mountain, was pleased Avista had the power up and running within 45 minutes.
Oh, cool.
So, you know, it just a kind of a scary situation for a minute there, but it quickly resolved. And
sure. And they're prepared even when there's long-term outages. Like they've got the lift team that can go up there and yeah. rescue people. So
yeah.
And we've seen them in action. They're pretty good.
And for the most part, I mean, all those trails tend to end in a way that, like, if you come off of a ski hill and you wait at the bottom,
mm-hmm.
Like, as long as you wait there, they know where to go look for you. It's right. when people start going and wandering off into the woods. It's
right,
where
it gets bad.
Or they could end up at the mountain house itself. So, you know, not a scary situation completely, but one that, you know, I'm sure Jeff wasn't wanting his Friday to be spent
in the dark.
His Friday morning going, oh gosh, it's opening weekend or the week after opening week.
My power's out.
My power's out. Great. I have X amount of people up on the hill.
Well, good. That got. I'm glad that got resolved.
Yeah. So that was my last story for the front page of the Tuesday edition.
Cool. And I think that's we did have our if you guys want to see it, we had a staff Christmas picture.
Oh yeah, we took a staff Christmas photo.
Staff Christmas photo. It's on the front page. Just wishing everybody a Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays and yeah. I mean, we mean it.
So. Yeah. Well, Merry Christmas to everyone from Kellogg Plastics and LED Lights Unlimited, and they would like to thank you for your business this past year. They look forward to helping you light up your life in the new year. Please visit their website at www.ledlightsunlimited.net or stop by and see them at 113 East County Road in Smelterville.
I didn't know that was what the name of the road was.
I think it changed.
Must have. Interesting. Yeah,
like it's County Road. It's a different name.
Because it's always been Silverelli Road.
Well, no. There was a, I think it was like East Mullen Avenue.
Maybe. We'll have to look into that.
Huh.
That's interesting. Well, I think now it's a good time to send it over to our good friend.
Oh, yes. Interview time with Julie.
Yes. So we did that. She's always a saint. So let's throw it on over to that. This week's interview is brought to you by Booch So Rad. Do you want a happy tummy? Check out Booch So Rad Kombucha, locally made small batch kombucha. It tastes great and is great for you. Booch So Rad can be purchased at Lisa's Gems in Kellogg, or you can get set up for delivery. Booch So Rad is also available at The Bean, Dirty Dog Saloon, and The Goose in the Tree Cafe. For more information or to place an order, check out their Facebook page or visit BoochSoRad.com. Drink Booch. Be rad.
Hey, we're here with Julie Zook and
the
Julie Zook, our favorite Julie. Julie has the distinct honor of being this year's winner of our Christmas Cree. That's a Native American that we celebrate on Christmas.
Yes, yes.
No, our Christmas tree decorating contest. How are you doing today, Julie?
I'm just wonderful. I'm excited. What an honor.
What an honor.
What an honor.
That's good. She's a good sport.
This is one of the ones that's, I mean, it's not as participated in as like the cutest couple, but it's, well, even the ones, because we have the one with the dogs too, and that one does pretty well.
I don't think we actually vote on dogs. They just send us dogs.
Oh, we don't vote on dogs?
No.
We should vote on dogs.
I would vote on all the dogs, though.
I would, too.
Yeah, I wouldn't be able to pick a winner. That wouldn't be fair.
There's a lot of dogs that are.
And don't forget the cats, guys, too.
Oh, yeah.
You know? We could do some cats.
Pets. We should just do pets.
How many cats do you have?
I have two. I have an 18-year-old Callie. And I think he's going to be four, Otto. He's a rescue cat. He was caught in a car engine. So I've got Otto, hence the name.
Otto.
I had a cat once. Its name was Kitty. And it was just, it killed mice. That was about it.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what they're here for.
That is what they're here
so,
for.
So, as the winner of the Christmas tree contest, you have earned yourself a big old $100 gift certificate to the Coeur d'Alene Resort, which is owned by our proprietor, Mr. Dwayne Hagedon.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So congratulations to you, Julie.
Thanks again. This is a little something you guys probably don't know. How I got into decorating trees years ago was, there's probably five or six of us moms here used to take our little darlings to breakfast with Santa at the Coeur d'Alene Resort.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so they had all the trees at the time. It was not as big as it is today, but they had all the decorated trees around the room.
Mm-hmm.
And Santa, of course, was there because we were having breakfast with Santa.
Of course.
So anyway, so that's kind of what got me into this decorating. I've always liked the decorating, but into more of the more tailored decorating. When the kids were little, I used to have three different trees.
Mm-hmm.
We had a cartoon tree, then I had a lot with the animated ornaments from Hallmark, and then just more of a traditional tree.
So for the folks who, because obviously it's on a podcast, people can't see it, explain a little bit what your tree was this year.
Oh, goodness sakes. Just a lot of gold, a lot and some red accents, and I don't think you could see a branch in the thing.
What's your? Because I'm sure some people would be interested, especially me, because I don't have any skill with this. What's your approach to decorating a tree? Like, do you put on the balls first, or is it like what's your approach here?
I usually do all the balls first.
Okay.
Yeah, I do that, and then I try to stagger the colors and everything like that. And then, my gosh, after that, then it's hands-on stuffing. I've got all kind of, you know, sparkly baubles that, you know, go everywhere on that tree. So.
I voted for your tree. I'm shameless. I looked right at it and said it easily.
That's the winner.
And I don't have a star. And no star at the top. No, it looks more like New Orleans or something. I don't know.
Mine's back into a corner, so it's not even, like, decorated fully. It's just the front part that you see.
You put up a tree?
Yeah, I got a tree.
Wow.
Girlfriend appreciates that.
That does.
I'm not a tree person myself, but she likes it.
I do not put up a tree.
No?
No. We don't. We're not tree people.
You're not?
Not even a little bit. Huh. In fact.
Well, I have a fake tree.
I'm allergic to pines, so
fair.
Real trees, I don't mess with the real trees. But
okay.
No, we are Christmas people. We are. We don't really celebrate it, though. We don't really give presents because our kids already... It's like we pick what they want and we get it for them. And then I don't want to make them wait all the way until December 25th for them to enjoy it. Because then, you know, they only have like half of their break. I'd rather them have their stuff and, you know, I guess I'm not very good at surprises.
So maybe there's no self-control there.
And probably no secrets either. I'm not going to tell you a secret ever. I think that's true. We think there's so much pressure put on families, parents, everybody to have this perfect, environment. And that's not the case.
Well, the Valley does a lot of things to try to help get as close as you can to that. I mean, like we did with the telethon, there's, you know, that raises funds for that. And then there's lots of Christmas dinners that have been holding around. We just did a store in the Snake Pit one.
Right. I went to the Kellogg High School Christmas band concert.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not kidding. Standing room only. People were in the hallways around the gym just so they could listen.
Uh-huh.
But, I mean, these are the kind of things I think that are the more fun aspects of Christmas anymore.
I do as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think Shad does a good job with that band, by the way.
Yeah.
He's fantastic.
Yeah.
So are they. Yeah, he's a great leader.
Santa's also a busy guy around.
Santa
pops up in a lot of places in the Valley.
That's true. I was driving by my house the other day, and Santa was just walking down... East Portland Avenue, just hanging out down there.
I'm sure that was Santa.
And I like pulled up and like took a, I'm like, hey Santa, can I take a picture? And he goes, of me or with me? Of you. I'm 30 years old. Maybe with me.
Perfect.
No, but it's fun. It's a lot of fun. Do you have any particular Christmas memories?
Well, you know, I used to for many years. I think it started back in 1978. Started having a Christmas brunch for people who didn't have families in the area.
Mm-hmm.
They could just stop by. That started out initially with probably 10 people, and it grew to 60 people. So I did that for many years until my grandchildren were probably 4 or 5.
And you said 60 people came?
60.
So that was like, what is that, half the population of Mullen?
Yeah.
All the Mullen people.
All of the Mullen people.
No, well, it's everybody. No, just people that didn't have
folks, Julie Zook is a Mullen girl.
Yeah, so. I am a Mullen girl. That's very true. Uh-huh. But anyway, so we did that. And then until the kids got a little older, then they wanted to start their own family traditions. And I totally appreciated that and respected that. So the Christmas brunches just kind of went away. Doggone it. But that was always one of my very favorites.
Did they ever do anything up in Mullen for Christmas?
Well, the Mullen Fire Department.
Well, I know they bring in Santa. Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, they brought in Santa. But I mean, like, other than that, because they don't, other than Santa coming into the fire department, they don't really do anything anymore.
I don't think so.
I think maybe they do their own, lighting festival up there?
I don't know.
I don't know that. But when I was little, my grandmother, she's out of Austria, and she used to make petitza.
Oh.
And that was wonderful. It was a real lovely thin crust filled with nuts and honey, and it was wonderful. So I miss that.
Did that recipe make it into the cookbook?
No, there is no recipe.
Oh.
That's the problem. I don't even have the recipe.
Okay.
So
Grandma held on to that one.
Yeah.
Huh? Yeah. You kind of, and I'm a tosser as well on a recipe, but yeah, nobody has it.
Dang. Hey, what happens?
Yeah. No, I get that. So what are your plans for this Christmas? Have you already
Well, I'm excited. Christmas came early. Jared, my son Jared, my youngest son, just got here with his bride, Miss I. And I'm going to have the boys. And then Jeff is coming over from Post Falls with the four kids. And we are just going, and my cousin from Mullen. Uh-huh. Ooh, we're just going to have Christmas dinner at my house. It's not going to be traditional, however. Both of my boys want beef stroganoff this year for Christmas dinner. Mm. So...
Well, comfort food.
Once again, we talked about how people are doing, you know, sometimes it's less traditional, especially if you just can't make it happen. But mm-hmm. you know, so there's nothing wrong with that.
We did family Christmas, the McDonald family Christmas yesterday.
Uh-huh.
And it was my mom, my dad, my family, so my wife and kids, my brother, his girlfriend, and their kids. And then Caleb and his girlfriend, and then Sarah, her boyfriend, and their daughter. And we did a gingerbread house building competition.
Oh, how fun.
Which, those gingerbread houses, if you go to my mom's Facebook page, you can vote on whose was the best. And I fully expect to get your vote there.
Oh, are you going to give me a hint as to which one I need to vote for? I know immediately.
You just have to say, you don't even have to watch the video. Just go into the comments and say, Josh and Aries was the best.
There you go.
Okay.
No, it was fun. It's funny the gifts you get as an adult.
Yes.
You remember being a kid and like you wanted very specific things, and now like you get like weird, thoughtful gifts that are like house decorations or things that you never really thought you'd ever want.
Yeah.
And now you're like, how cool is this?
Mm-hmm.
It's just weird.
It is weird, but you know, you kind of get to be a little on the older side, and you kind of realize, and you do normally, you amass a ton of stuff. Mm-hmm. You got things, you got stuff, but you know, you do realize that it's the people in your life, you know, that's the best.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, I would say you're probably spot on there.
We've always, my father and I, we've never been very traditional about the holiday. Josh knows where this is going. We particularly try to get people booze and precious metals.
Got it.
Both practical, both very practical gifts. So we try to, I guess we're just not. We're even going to the casino.
I was saying, you guys go to the casino, and you guys, like, it doesn't surprise me. But
we still stay you know, it's all family. Like, we go see family on Christmas, but it's definitely a...
Christmas is just so subjective anymore.
I think it would, whatever works for you.
There you go.
I totally believe that.
There you go. Yeah. Absolutely.
There's so many non-traditional families and everything currently, you know, that, you know, it's whatever makes everybody happy. And, you know, that old 50s, 60s card, you know, the beavers and everything, it doesn't happen, unfortunately, very often anymore.
No. I also think Christmas is, it depends on the day of the week.
Yeah.
Because
it falls on a Tuesday, Wednesday. So it's kind of strange.
Yeah, Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, Tuesday, Wednesday makes things kind of weird. I think it changes how people do things.
Work?
Yeah. I mean, we're here. It's Monday. We're working right now. And, you know, people are still going to want a paper on Friday night. So... We have to work.
So we're putting it together.
We got to make sure that if anything happens on Christmas Day, we're like doctors or firefighters. I mean, not as cool.
Yeah, no.
Oh, I think you're just as cool.
Okay, thank you. We appreciate that.
But no, Christmas is just so much fun.
Can be.
It can be. It can be so much fun.
For sure. Do any sledding?
No.
No?
So one time my ex-wife, and Julie knows my ex-wife, Tristan.
Mm-hmm.
She was a high risk, like, she loves sledding.
Okay.
And, you know, in Kellogg City Park, the sledding hill right by the Scout House.
Sure.
So she got on a sled, and we had had, like, a really great snowfall. And we were probably both 18, maybe 17, 18 at the time. She hit a jump, caught air, and smacked into the side of the Scout House.
Oh, my gosh.
And got up and was ready to go again. And I have not gone sledding since. But it was the most extreme
thing
I had ever
seen. You're just
kind
of at the will of gravity. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, it's not great. Well, and then there was the time that we all took our shirts off and decided we were going to go down bare-chested. And we come up with, like, the little ice sores on the parts of our bodies. Yeah. No, I decided that from now on, the only time I want to be moving quickly over the top of snow is if I'm in a car.
Good idea.
Not on a sled, not on my bare chest.
And hopefully not sliding when you're in the car.
Well, yes, naturally.
True. When you talk about sledding in Mullen, I lived at the top of Washington Street, which the house that I grew up in is no longer there because the freeway took our house. Mm-hmm. It was just up on the hill from the high school. Anyway, Washington Street was one of those, this is steepest streets in Mullen. And Mitch Alexander put that video up about the different cars, just the sledding and cars missing sleds. That pretty much was, I swear to God, in Mullen.
Okay. Filmed in Mullen.
That's fair.
It sure could have been because I thought, oh my gosh, I remember a couple times, barely, car missing me.
I want somebody to sled down from the M.
From the
M on the hillside.
I'm sure Stetson Spooner would do it.
Stetson would probably do it.
If you could put Stetson up to it.
Yeah, yeah. Get that snowmobile and haul him up there.
Right, right. As long as you take him up first.
He'll go do it.
In a snowmobile, he'll go.
I've never been up there. Is it steep enough?
It's steep.
All right.
It's a steep trek.
That's fair. I was going to say, because you couldn't do it from like the Kellogg K. You'd hit a tree immediately. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh gosh.
Just jump off
the
and
Kellogg
like.
K. Actually, if you went down the back side of the Kellogg K, there's a 200 yard straight stretch. That's how you get up there.
Okay. You could maybe do that.
As long as you don't venture off that straight stretch.
Right.
You've got to be like surgical in your sled steering. That wouldn't be fun though. You'd hit. There's a once you hit about the so it's 10 feet up like vertical.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's a incline.
Mm-hmm.
So when you hit that bottom, there's a 10-foot drop between the mountain and where you're going to land.
I believe it, yeah.
So I don't know that you should sled.
Probably not a good idea.
Yeah.
What?
Was it the Chevy Chase movie where he had the saucer that he was going down the...
Christmas Vacation.
Was it there you go. And all the sparks and everything?
Yeah. He sprays it. We actually... So at the McDonald House, we play a Christmas drinking game every year where we pick a different movie. And we find a couple lines that you have to take a drink every time they say Christmas, but not Merry Christmas. So good old fashioned family Christmas,
mm-hmm.
Anything that's not Merry Christmas, you have to drink. And then whenever she calls him Sparky,
mm-hmm.
you have to chug whatever's left in your beer. So we were a little tuned up last night, but we watched that. And it's funny because he sprays his... The non-nutritive cereal varnish.
Okay.
Because he's a food tester. Sure. He sprays on the bottom of this metal sled, and he sits down on it, and all of a sudden, all you see is, like, smoke because he's going so fast.
I love that movie.
we were all pretty tuned up, and we only drink PBR when we do it. So
it's
we
probably for your safety.
Everybody's.
We buy about, probably 100 PBRs in between my wife, myself, Caleb, Sarah, Ryan. We get pretty tuned up. It's a good time.
That sounds like a great game. Did you think it up yourself or what?
Yeah. Oh, a couple years ago, 2 years ago, it was, you had to chug every time we watched A Christmas Story, and it was drink every time they say Christmas, but chug every time they said Red Ryder BB gun.
Oh.
Well, they say Red Ryder BB gun about 7 times in the first, 15 minutes. So by about 10:30 last Christmas, me and my brother and sisters, we were passed out on the living room floor.
You should have to do it with a holiday-themed beverage.
I don't know what a holiday-themed beverage is.
Eggnog.
Oh.
Oh,
oh I know. I couldn't do it either. But I'm just saying, eggnog. That's holiday.
Eggnog.
Hot
toddy?
Hot buttered rum or something.
Hot buttered rum. I was just going to say that one as well.
Yeah, that could get you all sorts of tuned up.
Or just Rumplemans.
Oh, Rumple. Just some Rumpleman shots, So when you die, when you evacuate everything, it's at least minty
Your
fresh.
Body is maintained, yeah.
It's like embalming fluid. Peppermint embalming fluid.
Oh, so bad.
So any of these drinking games you guys want to take, gosh, this has been a fun interview.
This has been.
It's just talking. There's no agenda here. We just wanted to shout Julie out tell her congratulations for winning the tree contest. And also, she's been one of our biggest sponsors and supporters.
Of course.
Since we started this back in the beginning of July.
Yes.
So here we are this is the last podcast of the year, I think.
Yes.
Maybe
close.
Wednesday would be the first.
Might have one more.
This is supposed to be the last podcast of the year. So here we are 6 months later. Our biggest supporter is...
Right across from us,
hanging out with us.
Well, I believe in you guys. I think you're doing a great job.
Well, thank you,
Julie.
So much. And thank you so much for coming in, Julie.
Anytime for you guys.
All right. Well, we will Talk to you later.
Okay.
Cool. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
And thanks again to our good friend Julie Zook coming in and talking to us about the holidays. It's always an absolute delight to have her.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So that's going to bring us right into our local sports. And, you know, last week we actually had a pretty full docket of sports, despite most of the schools being in the holiday break. Right. It was, you know, or getting ready for holiday break.
It was a
pretty full slate.
Right.
We'll kick it off with Wallace boys basketball. I had a chance to be at this game. It was last Tuesday, and it was Wallace versus Bonner's Ferry. Big time game. You could feel that both teams didn't want to lose this one. Wallace came out and won it, but it was how they won it that was pretty particular. Back and forth game the whole night. I was impressed. Bonner's Ferry has some really talented freshmen, including one of them who can get up and dunk it with authority. As a freshman.
Good for him.
But the Wallace team, kind of the gritty, gutsy performance that we get at least one of these from Wallace every year where they play a team that they have no real business hanging around with and beating, but they do. Last year being an outlier where it started that way, but they ended up beating everybody. Mm-hmm. Wallace was down 70-72 with 12 seconds left. And Carter Bailey took the inbound pass, ball faked one way, dribbled all the way up the court. And we thought, oh man, Carter Bailey, 22 points on the game. It's Carter Bailey time. He's going to the rack. Dribbles in the paint, kicks it out to the corner to Brad Teske, a reserve player who was only in the game because Logan Hull, the starting power forward and probably the most tenured player on the team, had fouled out. Hits Brad Teske in the corner for a wide open three-pointer. And I was sitting there with my brother, Caleb, and Wallace principal Chris Lund, and we were laughing because everything about that shot was wrong. It was a bad follow through. His feet weren't quite set, but man, he knocked it down, and the Miners won 73-72. Just a fun game to be a part of. Later that week, Wallace hosted Mullen, and this Mullen right now, the boys are playing shorthanded. I don't necessarily expect Wallace knocked him off 56-29, but Mullen's playing shorthanded, so I assume when they play again, the score is going to be a little bit more competitive. We didn't get any sort of stats for that game. We got stats from the Wallace Mullen girls game, but not from the boys game, which is odd. Moving over to Kellogg girls basketball. Kellogg hosted Wallace last week and knocked them off 43-36 in a game that it was just really weird. I actually broadcasted that game for the Wildcats Live online forum. And you know, at times it felt like the Wildcats really didn't want to be there. Meanwhile, Wallace absolutely just, they were playing hard-nosed defense. And then, you know, kind of picking their spots. It wasn't so much a punch, counter-punch kind of game. It was more of a, Kellogg would go on a run, and then Wallace would happily tighten their defense up and close the gap. Mm-hmm. And it was just odd. Haley Cheney finished with 22 points. And she's a sophomore Wildcat. And it was just odd. It was just an odd game. I don't even know how to describe it to you. Something about it just felt off. Meanwhile, Jaden House just continues her stretch of ridiculous play for Wallace. She's a sophomore, much like Haley. We've got some of the best sophomore girl basketball players in the Valley right now that we've ever had. She finished with 16 points, but she was scoring from everywhere on the floor. She was underneath the basket, going for rebounds, battling with Cheney, trying to get rebounds, leading the fast break, hitting the deep three ball, like just doing everything. So it was a competitive game. It felt like one side took the game a little bit more seriously than the other. I was kind of at the end of it. I was almost pulling for the upset a little bit just because I liked the fire that Wallace was playing with, but not to be. Wallace girls hosted Mullen last Friday night. And Jaden House, like I said, continues to impress. 18 points in the 60-23 win over the Tigers. Emily Dykes from Mullen had 15 points and 16 rebounds. Mullen still playing without Taloa Fallingwater, who is out with a high ankle sprain. Kellogg boys basketball. The Kellogg boys had one game last week. They went on the road to Moscow, and they got waxed. They lost 54-74. Just not a good performance.
Not good at all.
You know, the week prior, they went up to Sandpoint and knocked off Sandpoint in a very physical game, and then, you know, a week later to go to Moscow and just kind of get it handed to you like that. I don't think anyone saw that one coming. Mullen boys hosted Lakeside last week.
Oh, yeah?
And Lakeside has been kind of shooting up all the rankings mm-hmm. in the Idaho State media polls. Currently ranked pretty high, but they beat Mullen 90-31.
Oof.
Kenyon Spotted Horse scored 25 points for the Knights. It was rough. Coach Paul Elston was pretty complimentary, though. Lakeside's a terrific offensive team. They play well together and have for years. They know exactly where their teammates are going to be, and it's obvious they put a lot of time into the game. If we can clean up a few things, it would have been a lot closer than the final score indicated, but Lakeside's speed and quickness forces anyone to rush into a speed that you're just not used to playing. So, shorthanded Tigers still struggling to find their way, but, you know, I think come the end of the season, they'll compete at districts. Still waiting on the arrival of Riley Trogdon, who had 70 stitches put into his body for a collision with some glass.
Fun for him.
And then, yeah, just not quite at full strength yet. Mullen girls also hosted Lakeside. Similar result, not quite as inflated of a score, but, you know, the final score 67-16. Just a lot of, you're starting to see the effects of no Toloa Falling Water being on the floor. When she's on the floor, it's just a dramatically different team for Mullen. She's like 5'10 and can pretty much do everything she wants on the basketball court. So she becomes a focal point.
Right.
For Kellogg Wrestling had a big weekend. They went over and, last Thursday and, they took on Coeur d'Alene and Lake City in a quad. And these quads are kind of hard. You basically go in there and there are four teams and it's, you know, you get two of the four teams that are there and you wrestle a duel with them. And a duel is every member of the team wrestles the opposing weight class.
Right, right.
So Kellogg went over and, you know, they got beat by Coeur d'Alene and Lake City against Coeur d'Alene. They lost 64-18, but Raymond Healy, Wyatt High, Carson Hudson, they all scored pins for Kellogg, which was big time. For Lake City, it was a lot closer. They lost 51-33. Healy High, Carter Stepro, Judson Hall, Caden Zimmerman, and Mike Sentney all scored pins for Kellogg High School. Scott Miller, really happy. He just kind of gushed about his team, and you know, we were hit with some illnesses and injuries that changed our lineup some, but I was really excited with how we wrestled. Both Lake City and Coeur d'Alene are excellent teams, and both were trophy teams at last year's state tournament, so I was pleased with how we competed in a shorthanded situation. He also heaped praise on sophomore Raymond Healy, who's really coming along well for the team as a wrestler. They also, Wildcats, competed in the tri-state tournament, and Chance, you're a Post Falls guy, so... Yeah. Post Falls wrestling has been kind of top-notch for the longest time.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I believe the other night, Post Falls lost their first league wrestling match in like a decade. They lost to Lake City. But Kellogg went over there, and they scored 24 points. This tri-state tournament, I mean, they bring in the best of the best from Washington, Idaho, and Oregon.
Right.
And they all compete at NIC, which has another decorated wrestling team.
Yep.
And Kellogg finished 48 out of 60 teams, which, you know, when you start thinking about it like that, doesn't sound very good. But when you start looking at who these teams are, it becomes a pretty quality, you know, to even be invited
sure.
to the Tri-State's a big deal. Judson Hall from Kellogg actually just barely missed being consolation champion at 138 weight. He lost to a stud out of Coeur d'Alene, a guy that most people will probably get really familiar with over the next few months if you read the Coeur d'Alene sports page. Dusty Roberts from Coeur d'Alene. This is just he's an absolute stud from Coeur d'Alene High School. Austin Stepro also just kind of... He won the George Wild last week, came into this, picked up two wins, and then two losses, but the losses against 5A competition, the biggest competition out of Washington, Oregon, you know, you can't fault the guys for going over there and competing.
Right.
So a good showing there from Kellogg Wrestling, who continues to, you know, I mean, by state time, I think I talked about during the sports tab, this is one of the best wrestling teams overall that Kellogg's had in quite some time. They probably have 7 or 8 guys who should be competing for a top 3 spot at the state tournament in February.
That's awesome.
Yeah. A lot of fun to cover them.
Very cool. Anything else for sports?
No, that'll do it for sports. That's cool. Your local sports wrap-up.
Cool.
Hey, and if you're looking for a refreshing, locally made beer, check out Radio Brewing at 319 Main Street in Uptown Kellogg. Don't forget about Wednesday Trivia Night with Johnny B, where they are in the midst of their 6-week trivia series, where the winner gets a free keg of beer. Keep your eye out for their Uptown Throwdown Block Party, scheduled for February 1st. Make sure to mention the podcast in the tap room to get your first beer for only $1. Radio Brewing, put radio in your mouth hole.
I love that app. It's good stuff. Hey, before we go into our regional news, we do have a little bit of breaking news. The USW Local 5114, they released on their Facebook page that they tweaked their tentative agreement again. They tweaked their tentative agreement and are putting it back up to the vote to the union to see if they can ratify and see if they can get a deal done with Hecla Mining Company.
There you go.
To go back to work at Lucky Friday. One of the interesting things about this is, for the first time that I'm aware of, the ballots will be electronic.
So yeah, I saw.
They'll be either calling them in or texting them, so that'll be interesting. Sounds a little more efficient.
Right.
But yeah, we'll have a story out on that definitely in the Friday edition. So let's shoot over to our regional headlines now.
Regional headlines. All right. So this one is kind of an interesting one. I grabbed this because I was trying to kind of figure out what was going on here. And this one's by Craig Northrup. He's a staff writer for the Hagedon News Network.
Mm-hmm.
Report blasting Shea cast shadow. A Washington State legislative report labeling Spokane Valley Representative Matt Shea a terrorist has prompted a review of an Idaho House legislator from Blanchard for her role. The report, commissioned by the Washington State House Representatives and was released Thursday, summarizes a 4-month investigation that found Shea proactively helped plan an armed takeover of the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge by militia members, including Amon Bundy. Bundy headed a January 2016 occupation of the refuge that lasted 24 days and led to the shooting death of occupier Robert Finicum.
What a bizarre story.
Yeah. Shea was known to publicly support Bundy's group, visiting the occupiers in the location. Yeah, it's he's a... very conservative, supports anti-gun rallies, the readout movement. Yeah, just kind of an interesting story here.
That's crazy.
The report says Shea transmitted military-style operation plans to members of a group he chaired at the time called Coalition of Western States under the guise of Operation Cold Reality, bent on supporting militia members during the occupation. The legislative report further reports charges that Heather Scott, who wasn't a focus of the investigation, is also a member of the Coalition of Western States and served in a leadership capacity in the months leading up to the January 2016 standoff.
Wow. That's a crazy story.
Yeah.
What a story.
Yeah.
I'd like to hear more about that.
Coeur d'Alene Press Facebook, or not Facebook, website. But yeah, report blasting Shea cast shadow. I suggest everyone go read it. It's a long story, but
interesting.
It's interesting.
Definitely. Going to kind of in turn with the story that you wrote about Kellogg School District. The first flu-related deaths have been reported in Idaho this year. Idaho residents this influenza season have been reported to the Idaho Department of Health and Welfare. It was 2 women in northern Idaho, both over the age of 70 years old, die from flu-related causes. Quote, the Idaho Department of Health and Welfare is reminding residents that flu can be serious. Dr. Leslie Tenglesen, T-E-N-G-E-L-S-E-N, the Idaho Influenza Surveillance Coordinator. Although these deaths occurred in northern Idaho, influenza activity is on the rise statewide. One important prevention measure for Idahoans is to get annual flu shots. Local public health officials in Idaho are also responding to outbreaks of influenza among residents of assisted living and long-term care facilities in several communities throughout the state. Influenza can spread rapidly in residential facilities. It's important that the people who live there, their caregivers, staff, visitors, everybody, are all vaccinated and follow good hand-washing and sanitation practices to prevent spreading the flu. So, I mean, it's bound to happen. This is the flu season, but wash your hands and try to not get sick out there, folks.
Ew.
Ew is right.
I'm so over gross stuff like this. I'm just sickness and flu-related deaths. And
yeah, it's not great.
It's not great. It's not great. It just makes me sad. This one out of the Columbia Basin Herald in Moses Lake by Emery Denman. Three teenagers shot in shooting believed to be gang-related.
Mm.
Three teenagers between 14 and 18 years old were shot in a drive-by shooting around 10 p.m. Friday night in the 1500 block of West Broadway Avenue of Moses Lake, according to police. Two male subjects were transported to Samaritan Hospital for their injuries, while the female driver was airlifted to an out-of-area hospital. Law enforcement had no updates as to their conditions by early Saturday afternoon, though friends of the driver said she was in serious condition. The incident occurred after a suspect vehicle, a white van, drove up on three victims in their own vehicle and opened fire. The white van then fled the scene, and though believed to be gang-related, law enforcement is releasing no other information at this time as they investigate. Police ask anyone with information to call 509-762-1160. Another drive-by shooting believed to be unrelated took place the next morning around 10 a.m. in the 3100 block of West Wapato Drive in Moses Lake, where no one was injured in that one. So, kind of some crazy...
kind of glad we don't have those around here, Josh.
Crazy stuff happened in Moses Lake.
Mm-hmm. Last story that I've got. 4-H members sew dolls for young hospital patients. This is by Brett Ann Serbin of the Daily Interlake. This is on Saturday, December 14th. 4-H's? Is that... Because it's 4-H, but they put 4-H's.
4-H'ers.
Oh, 4-H'ers. Oh. I thought it was like a clever pun on girl 4-H'ers. Spent 4 hours sewing medical play dolls for patients at Kalispell Regional Healthcare's Montana Children's Hospital. Quote, "We'd like to say it's kids sewing for other kids," said Carol Olson Erickson with the Grandview Supreme 4-H Club. The dolls are given to young patients and their siblings at the newly opened pediatric facility in Kalispell. Quote, medical play dolls are used as teaching tools with our child life specialists to help explain medical procedures to patients, explained a press release from the Montana Children's. By allowing the patients to be in charge and performing a medical procedure, these are all, you know, not actually performing a procedure on a doll, but a medical procedure on his or her doll, the patient learns about the procedures as well as gains a sense of control over the situation in the hospital. Dolls are made of soft flesh-toned fabric and outfitted with mini hospital gowns. The ideas for local 4-H members is to get together to create the toys came from Kalispell quilter Larnette Kuff, C-U-F-F-E? Kuffe?
I don't know.
Yeah. Total of 35 youth leaders and volunteers, 4-H organizers across Flathead County created around 30 dolls at the event last weekend. The doll makers range in age from 6 to 15 years old, and they were helped out by adult leaders and volunteers.
Well, that's a good story.
That's a great happy story.
Hey, well, come one, come all to the 2020 Joint Chamber Installation Banquet hosted by the historic Wallace Chamber of Commerce. The event will feature great music by Blues Festival favorite John Kelly, fantastic chefs catering the meal, and the unmatched ambience of the Wallace Elks Ballroom. The party will have a Casablanca theme using Humphrey Bogart's line from the 1942 film classic, "Here's Looking at You, Kid." The Joint Chamber Installation Banquet is January 10th. Tickets are $30 and can be purchased by contacting either the Wallace or Silver Valley Chambers.
Awesome.
Well,
we're probably going to go to that.
Yeah.
Or at least one of us anyway.
They should. Yeah. Well, someone should be there.
Somebody should be
there. We should also let people know we're going to have kind of a preview on who's who and who's what going into the chamber. True. Coming up in one of our next editions.
We do have that. Yep, coming up. So between that and the Heckle story, we'll have a Good Friday edition with some other stuff. And then our New Year's Eve edition will be our annual Year in Review.
Year in Review.
It's always a fun one. We get to go through our racks and look at old stories that we've written. Yep. So good stuff. All right. Do we got anything else?
No, I think it's time for us to go celebrate Christmas.
All right. Merry Christmas, everybody. Happy holidays.
Yes.
Thanks for listening. Enjoy your holiday.
Be safe out there.
Yes, be safe and have fun. Anything on the news press end? We've got cookbooks.
Yeah, we still got cookbooks if you want one. They're 10
If you're looking to make a holiday.
Yeah, you need a quick holiday gift, come grab a cookbook full of Silverlight recipes.
There you go.
Cheap, easy, fun. They're great.
Love it. All right, guys. Thanks for listening. Merry Christmas.